We return to Exodus chapter 22, verse 21 today. Moses is speaking with God about some of the finer details of what is expected of the Israelites after God has given them their Ten Commandments, and they wanted more information, but not from God's voice. That kind of scared them. So we should probably picture Moses up on the mountain a little farther in the cloud, asking God a whole bunch of questions about different issues. And that's why we've got such a variety of things in this section of Exodus. So now, in verse 21, God says, "You shall not wrong a sojourner or oppress him, for you were sojourners in the land of Egypt." And this is a form of, "You will do unto others as you would have them do to you." Now, a sojourner is a non-native resident of a region. They would be, in our terms, an immigrant. Now, they're not an illegal immigrant, but rather someone who has a reason to be there in the country. And so God's command to the Israelites is, remember, you guys used to be the immigrant when you were in Egypt. And you were oppressed. You were mistreated. In fact, you were turned into a slave race. Don't be doing that to non-natives in the land of Israel. Once you get into the promised land and people come there to visit, to do commerce, to work, don't abuse them because you know you didn't like what was done to you. Good advice, and I think we need to continue with that principle to this day. Verse 22. "You shall not mistreat any widow or fatherless child." We're actually kind of talking about groups here that have little personal power. So now we've got a widow, a woman who has lost her husband, and she might be trying to raise kids, and that makes it difficult for her. So she could be a target. And God says, don't you do that. You should be looking out for her rather than looking out for your own way of abusing her situation or mistreating her. Same thing with the kids. If you know of kids that have lost either one of their parents, they are in a more dangerous situation. You should be helping them out, not trying to take advantage of their situation. And then comes the warning. If you do mistreat them and they cry out to me, I will surely hear their cry and my wrath will burn and I will kill you with the sword and your wives shall become widows and your children fatherless. Now this is a rule of thumb warning that if the Israelites as a people take advantage of widows and orphans, eventually, God's wrath will fall upon them, and they will experience widows and orphans in their own group because they didn't treat others as they wanted to be treated, and so they ended up being just like them. Verse number 25. "If you lend money to any of my people with you who is poor, you shall not be like a moneylender to him, and you shall not extract or exact interest from him." Now, the moneylending thing here is it's not a banking situation. It's basically someone who you know is going through a really hard time, and you've got the wherewithal to help them out financially, so you do so. But you don't treat it as if it's some sort of loan to make money off of. That is sinful because you're taking advantage of someone who's in a bad situation. You lend it to them, not expecting it back. This is actually the New Testament that Jesus said that. And you definitely don't charge them interest for it. That's because you're trying to help them through their tough time. Verse 26, same sort of situation. If you ever take your neighbor's cloak in pledge, you shall return it to him before the sun goes down, for that is his only covering, and it is his cloak for his body. In what else shall he sleep? And if he cries to me, I will hear, for I am compassionate. So here's the sense of someone does get into this situation where they're borrowing money from you to get them through a tough time. They may, in fact, say, I want to be good for this. I will pay it back. I want to give you collateral. And so you take the collateral. But the only collateral this particular person has is the overgarment that he wears when it's cooler, and he uses it as his covering at night after the job day is over. So God says, take that in consideration. If you do take that as collateral for him, give it back to him at the end of every workday as he's trying to work off his debt so that he can stay warm at night and not be uncomfortable. Because if you are so cold-hearted as to mistreat somebody in need like that, I'm going to take that into account. Verse number 28. You shall not revile God, nor curse a ruler of your people. So you don't talk bad about God, and you don't talk bad about the ruler of the people. It's not that you don't critique the people's ruler, it's you are not rude and inconsiderate about it. This passage is actually the one that Paul quotes in the book of Acts when he is before the Sanhedrin and the high priest orders him to be slapped on the mouth, and Paul turns around and says, God's going to slap you, you whitewashed wall. And immediately somebody says, hey, is that any way to talk to the high priest? And Paul turns around and says, I wasn't aware that he was the high priest, for the scripture says, you shall not speak ill or curse the ruler of your people. He's quoting this verse right here. So what had happened was, in his anger, Paul had started throwing around name-calling. He wasn't carrying out a critique in an appropriate fashion. He was being rude. And he realized that and corrected his error quickly. We are going through a political season right now, and there is a lot of high emotion on every side, everywhere you turn. It is perfectly appropriate for Christians to engage in conversation about the topics at hand when it comes to politics. But there is no call for rude, insensitive, and sometimes very crude and mean comments being made about a person that you have a problem with. You need to keep it real, and you need to keep it polite and considerate of the fact that the person you're talking to is someone made in the image of God. And you ought to be praying for their issue, since in your mind they have problems, rather than maybe reposting a nasty meme about them. Okay? This is where the rubber meets the road, people. We need to not just be hearers of the word, we need to be doers of it. Otherwise, we're apparently not taking it very seriously. So again, you shall not revile God, which no Christian would ever want to do that, nor curse a ruler of your people. Verse 29. You shall not delay to offer from the fullness of your harvest and from the outflow of your presses. The firstborn of your sons you shall give to me. This is the idea that what you are obligated to give, such as the tithe, you pay it when it's due. In this case, they were going to be living in a very agricultural-centric society. So when the grain harvest came in, you set aside the tithe at that time. When your olive oil was pressed, when your wine was processed from the grapes, whatever it was, that's when you set the tithe aside. Same sort of principle for us, I think, today, is that we are all obligated by our commitment to the work of God to give, I believe, a tithe still, but even if you disagree with me on that, an offering to the Lord, then we need to make sure it's set aside as we have been prospered by God and give it to Him. Delaying is actually detrimental to the work of God. And then the firstborn of the sons that are mentioned here is a reminder about the Passover. God saved the firstborn sons of Israel, therefore they belong to Him. They were going to be redeemed, and so that redemption price needed to be paid on time as well. Verse number 30. You shall do the same with your oxen and with your sheep. 7 days it shall be with its mother. On the 8th day you shall give it to me. So this is the idea of when the firstborn animal is born, it spends 7 days with mom. 8th day it is given to God, most likely in a sacrifice itself, or possibly given off to the priests, which we're not really talking an awful lot about the priests yet, but we will later, to the priests and the Levites so that it could be used for God's service. The match here is that on the 8th day of a little Israeli boy's life, that was the day he was circumcised, given his name, and shown to be part of the covenant people of God. The firstborn sons would be designated on that 8th day as being firstborn, and that's really when they needed to also acknowledge, God has redeemed my firstborn son. I owe God a redemption price for that. You shall be consecrated to me. Verse 31 begins with this reminder, all of this is about being holy, as I am holy, to be devoted to me as I am devoted to the right, to holiness. And because of that, the Jewish people were expected to act in the most appropriate behavior. And when we bring this into the modern era, into the Christian concepts, it is that Christians are the best people in any society. They should be the cream of the crop. They should be the most trusted, the most honorable, and in every respect, reflecting the morality of God. And so we should really strive to be holy as our Father in heaven is holy. Now, this does go on and have some other practical application. It says, therefore, you shall not eat any flesh that is torn by beasts in the field. You shall throw it to the dogs. So you don't eat roadkill. You don't eat some animal that has been attacked out in the field by wild animals and has died. You don't go out there and just start cutting steaks off of that, because that thing has been made unclean by not being butchered appropriately. And so holy people don't engage in unclean behavior. That's the principle that's being communicated here to the Israelis. Verse 1 of chapter 23, you shall not spread a false report. you don't lie about other people or situations. And it's not just you don't originate the lie, you don't help disseminate this. Can I be pragmatic and personal about this for a moment? Many of you are on Facebook or other media platforms, Twitter, TikTok, all that sort of stuff. And those things all have the opportunity to pass on or share with other people things that you've seen. Folks, double check stuff before you pass it on. It doesn't take all that long. I have seen way too often false information posted by my brothers and sisters in Christ that I took 15 seconds and checked it at the source and found out it wasn't correct. And when I find that, I tend to remember in my own mind, my responsibility is to contact that person by private message and say, hey, you realize this is not accurate. You need to do something about that. Don't pass it on. And honestly, in a situation like that, it needs to be deleted from the thread with an apology or maybe an explanation. Because we as Christians need to be the upholders of truth. And that includes even truth about people we don't like, because too often that's what I've been seeing on the media platforms, is it's some sort of nasty thing being said about someone that the poster doesn't really like. So let's be more careful about that. You shall not join hands with a wicked man to be a malicious witness. So you don't shake hands or do a high five to agree to lie about somebody else. That is horribly inappropriate. Verse 2, you shall not fall in with the many to do evil. Yeah, you don't run with the crowd when it's clear that the crowd is doing something wrong. In fact, you should be trying your best to convince them it's wrong and get them to stop it. Nor shall you bear witness in a lawsuit, siding with the many so as to pervert justice. It doesn't matter what the majority believes or thinks or wants done if what they want is wrong. You never side with the wrong thing, always with the right. Verse 3, nor shall you be partial to a poor man in his lawsuit. Now, this is interesting. Even though we are mostly concerned, I think, in our present day with the disenfranchised or the minority being abused by the majority, that we're concerned that the poor, the impoverished, is being taken care, being taken advantage of by the powerful and the wealthy. Every once in a while, the poor person, the person who has no power, is in the wrong. And the judgment needs to go against them when that's the case, because they are in the wrong. Now, you might, in the process of doing that, try to help them in other areas of their life, but you can't just simply say, oh, you're poor, therefore I'm going to go against the evidence and rule in your favor. Because that, folks, is wrong. And so let's always do the right thing. Verse number 4. If you meet your enemy's ox or his donkey going astray, you shall bring it back to him. We could talk about this being pets that people have in our modern society. If you see an animal that belongs to somebody that really doesn't like you, that the two of you really don't get along, you still have a moral obligation to help them out, because it's the principle of love. We love like God. We love like we want to be loved. We do unto others as we would want done unto us. And if our precious little animal had gone astray, we wouldn't care who it was that first found it. We would want that person to bring our precious animal back to us because that's the right thing to do. And so if that's what we would have done to us, we do it to everybody else, regardless of how we get along with them. Verse number 5, if you see the donkey of one who hates you lying down under its burden, you shall refrain from leaving him with it. You shall rescue it with him. So in the Israeli society, the idea was you're going down the street, minding your own business, and then you see there on the road your neighbor that you do not get along with. In fact, he treats you horribly. He's done mean things to you. But his donkey is like overloaded and down on the ground and can't get back up again. You don't just walk on by going, serves them right. God says you stop and go, can I help? Let's get this thing up because it's the right thing to do. Put it into a modern parlance. You're driving down the road and you see the neighbor that you don't get along with by the side of the road. Their car is, it's got flat tires and it's got steam pouring out of the radiator, and it's clear that their phone is not working for them to call a ride or anything. You don't just cruise on by going, serves them right. You stop and say, are you okay? Can I help? Can I give you a lift somewhere? Can I make a call for you? Because you see, that's the right thing to do. It's the thing that you'd want done for you if you were found in such a situation. So you always do it for others, regardless of your past relationship with those people. Verse number 6. You shall not pervert the justice due to your poor in his lawsuit. Now, this is the thing that we were already kind of talking about earlier, and that is, you don't take advantage of people just because they're poor. And so you got somebody in a lawsuit with you, and they maybe can't even afford a lawyer to take care of the situation. You don't just slam them hard in the legal proceedings because you can. You do the right thing. You don't pervert justice ever. Keep far from a false charge, and do not kill the innocent and righteous, for I will not acquit the wicked. So you don't get involved in the execution of righteous people. And I think the presumption here is that because of power or because of financial availability, sometimes people have taken out righteous people because there's a benefit to it. And God says that's not right, and it should never be done, ever. You shall take no bribe, for a bribe blinds the clear-sighted and subverts the cause of those who are in the right. And all of us understand what a bribe here. It's when money or something of value is promised in order to get something that is wrong done. This is a perversion of morality, and Christians should never be involved in it, either receiving the bribe or giving the bribe, because justice should prevail in every situation. Back in verse number 9, we're to the sojourner issue. You shall not oppress a sojourner. You know the heart of a sojourner, for you were sojourners in the land of Egypt. So you know personally what it feels like to be a foreigner in a foreign land being taken advantage of. So don't do that to anybody else. All of us who have traveled in other countries, even lived in other countries, can appreciate the reality of this. There is nothing more frustrating and sometimes even scary than being in a country not your own and knowing that you can be taken advantage of at any moment by someone that is unscrupulous. And what you really need at that moment is somebody that cares about you and doing the right thing. So if you want that when you're in the situation, then you need to be that scrupulous, helpful person when you see a foreigner in your own country in need of some sort of protective assistance. Verse number 10, we're going to get into the calendar system next, and we're almost out of time, so we won't get through the fullness of this. But verse number 10 is, I think it might be the first time that we're talking about the sabbatical year. For 6 years you shall sow your land and gather in its yield, but the seventh year you shall let it rest and lie fallow, that the poor of your people may eat, and what they leave the beasts of the field may eat. You shall do likewise with your vineyard and with your olive grove. So once they get into the promised land, the first harvest that is done is going to be the equivalent of a sabbatical year, because they did not actually sow or prepare that harvest. So the following fall, when they plant grain for the first time, that will be year one of their new cycle. And for the next 6 years, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, they will work hard and do all that they need to bring this harvest in. But then when the seventh year rolls around, everybody takes the year off. There is no official agricultural work going to be done. And this is the sabbatical cycle that we are going to spend even more time talking about tomorrow and also in the future.